Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, September 8th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered, uncovered, been introduced to. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That book is a gem in itself, and that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to help me turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted. On that same webpage, you can download the actual worksheet process itself. It's in the form of a PDF file. Just click on it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. There's also a whole host of audio files you can download of shows just like this one where people have called in and either been stepped through the worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the use of the process has improved their life. And you can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And when you tap on that, it will give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it often leads to questions, comments, answers, testimonials, etc. And if you have any of those, you can email us at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or Jeannie at Jeannie at whyagain.org. Or you can call us at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and whoever's on the switchboard will announce you by your area code, and we can have a discussion. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and this particular lesson is preceded by a number 4. What is sin? Sin is insanity. It's the means by which the mind is driven mad, and it seeks to let illusions take the place of truth. And being mad, it sees illusions where the truth should be. Sin gave the body eyes for what is there the sinless world would behold. So Sin isn't truth. Sin is about an error in thought or perception. And we're called to lesson 251, which says, I am in need of nothing but the truth. All I need is the truth. Commentary reads, I sought for many things and found despair. Now do I seek but one, for in that one is all I need and only what I need. All that I sought before, I didn't need. I did not even want. My only need, I did not recognize. But now I see that I need only truth, capital T, what actually is. In all that, all needs are satisfied, and all cravings end. All hopes are finally fulfilled, and dreams are gone. Now I have everything I could need. Now I have everything I could want. Now at last I find myself at peace. And for that peace, our Creator, we give thanks. What we denied ourselves, the Creator has restored, and only that is what we really want. When you see everything, when you see truly, when you see beyond just what the little bits of information that your five senses can afford you, you understand differently. So lesson 251 in the book, The Course in Miracles Experiment, is titled, The One Who Will Catch Me. She quotes Baal Shem Tov as saying, let me fall if I must fall. The one I am becoming will catch me. Pam writes, in 1977, comedian Gary Shandling was in a car accident that left him in critical condition. He was hospitalized for 2 weeks with a ruptured spleen. In what's often called an NDE, or near-death experience, he recalls a voice giving him a very clear choice. Do you want to stay and continue being Gary Shandling? Lately, I've been asking myself a similar question. Thankfully, mine doesn't involve wrecks or death or crushed spleens, but I've been wondering what I want to do with this collection of molecules named Pam Grout. The current arrangement seems rather static, wooden, and even a bit boring. My thoughts are restless, ready for a change. At the same time, I observe my thoughts and notice there is disappointment, sadness, lack of clarity. I also know there's a bigger part of me woven into the despair. This other part is much wiser and much more loving. It's working behind the scenes with this message, quote, relax, I got this, just fall into my arms, close quote. That's what lesson 251, I am in need of nothing but the truth, offers us. I have everything I need. I have everything I want. All that I denied myself is restored. All I have to do is rest in the loving arms of, quote, the one I am becoming, close quotes. That one is already here, probably with a big net, ready to catch me. So, that's our Course in Miracles lesson and the Pam Grout commentary for today. We have about 50 minutes left to have a conversation, discuss a topic of your choosing, talk about our Tuesday support group last night, or anything else that strikes your fancy. Last night was Tuesday, so we had a support group. Tomorrow night's a Thursday, so we'll have another support group. The information about how to join us on those is available at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And last night we watched about a 45-minute talk from JM, who is the individual who channeled the Way of Mastery. And he's doing a series of talks, nine different talks, on the Aramaic Lord's Prayer. They're very similar to the darshans he did about the Way of Mastery. And he's just going into great detail about the ancient Aramaic words and the fundamental differences in that culture and the way they related the language, and helping us, whoever's interested in learning about that, understand what deeper meanings there were in something like what's been called the Lord's Prayer. And so last night he spent 45 minutes basically just talking about two words, Abun Debushmaya, and that's the first line of the what's known as the Lord's Prayer. It's the Our Father in the Catholic terms. They call it the Our Father or the Lord's Prayer. And if you think that's really kind of silly, how could you talk for 45 minutes about two words? Then you really don't understand how much is packed in the ancient Hebrew letters and the ancient Aramaic language, where each letter in the language you could write an entire book about its meanings. And so the essence of that work is to become a light or a finger pointing in the direction for people who are doing true spiritual work, not psychological work, just psychological work, not religious work, just religious work, not physics work, just physics work, but the true spiritual work. As Guy Finley, I like to quote him when he said, there is nothing more practical than true spirituality, because it's basically just the study of who we are as people, as spiritual beings having a physical experience, etc., and how that spiritual energy or process or identity or being manifests or interacts with the physical body, the thoughts and the emotions, all of the social drama and trauma. And if you understand that better, then you're far better able to manage it, navigate it, create a loving experience from it, etc. So in a very real sense, there's nothing more practical than true spirituality. And so that's what we were talking about last night. We watched that 45 minutes, and then we had each of the different group members talk about what they heard, what they felt, if they were moved to comment, how the teachings that JM was presenting are either similar to or dissimilar from the way that each of us as group members had come to understand prayer, the Lord's Prayer, the Word, Father, Heaven, etc. And so it then led to one of our members who was facing a very challenging time with the physical body to do a series of rounds of the EFT tapping, which is another thing we recommend highly. And if you have any interest in that, the person that I send people to these days is Brad Yates. He's got a YouTube channel. And when people listen to Brad Yates on YouTube and they've had any experience with me, and if they had any, if they had any experience with my teaching an all-day class in EFT, they say, wow, Brad sounds a lot like you. And the reason for that is because he has stayed very close to what Gary Craig, who was the creator of EFT, did with his work as he developed it. And EFT, the short version of that is, it's a very simple method for you to give yourself an acupressure treatment for anything that bothers you physically, mentally, or emotionally. And the way to do that is very well explained. If you go to YouTube and type in Brad Yates, anything like how to tap, there's one nice long, you know, I don't know, 5 or 10 minute video where he explains the tapping procedure. And then you can type in any set of issues or emotions or dynamics that you might imagine and say, you know, Brad Yates tapping for pain, or Brad Yates tapping for dread, or Brad Yates tapping for anxiety. And you'll have a whole list of videos that you can watch and actually tap along with him and get wonderful results. And it may not be enough for you to dismantle, you know, multiple years of childhood sexual abuse, but it is a very powerful tool. I teach it to every one of my patients that's willing to learn, have been for a long, long time, well over 10 years now. And so that was another part of our session last night. And some people absolutely love that technique and the results they get. And other people, not so much. But that's one of the reasons that I just continue to learn new techniques and explore things, because I have learned some things over the years that lots and lots of people love and swear by, and other people that are very well-intentioned and really want to feel better and get better, they can't stand it, or they get no good results. And so when that happens, I switch it up and I go look for another tool or technique or worksheet or paradigm for thinking about how are we creating our experience of life. You know, the other thing that's going on is Dale Allen Hoffman, who I have interviewed for Mind Shifters Radio, and I think it was back in 2013, I'm not sure, but one of those years there was the better part of a year where we were doing this show, and Dale Allen Hoffman agreed to come on Fridays, and Michael called it Aramaic Fridays. So there's a whole treasure trove of audio files from the archives of this show where Dale was sharing his knowledge of the ancient Aramaic, and always from a perspective of how might it be useful, how might I apply this knowledge of the language and of the culture and of the idioms to actually benefit me in my life today. And so at the same time that JM is doing a 9-week deep dive into the Aramaic Lord's Prayer, that's available through the wayofmastery.com website, at the same time that's happening, Dale Allen Hoffman and his friend Oliver are going through Aramaic wisdom and light. So they're going through various words and various concepts, trying to help us understand from a practical level what were the teachings of the great masters like Yeshua and others that are woven into, literally the concepts underlying them are woven into the Aramaic language. And one of the concepts that I was listening to this morning, and I've heard Dale talk about this quite a bit, but it struck me as something to share with this audience, is the concept of the phrase, pray in my name. And it's kind of a lead-in to the Aramaic Lord's Prayer, or the Our Father in the Catholic version. And it's said that Yeshua said to the disciples, pray in my name. Well, if that's important, and if this is a master teacher teaching his followers, it would be really useful to find out, what did that phrase mean in the original language? What word were they using in the ancient Aramaic that then got translated into Greek and then got translated into Old English, etc. And the understanding from scholars like Dale Ellen Hoffman is that that word was Shem. In English, you know, S-H-E-M. And so the understanding is that when Jesus or Yeshua's followers were asking him, how do we pray or how do we, you know, pull off these supposed miracles that you're pulling off? How do we get better in our lives? He said, pray in my Shem. Or, as the English understanding would have us say, pray in my name, which, so I pray in the name of Jesus or Yeshua, but the Shem as a word, as a concept, as a dynamic, referred to the energetic essence of whoever you're referring to. So if you have a favorite movie star or music artist and you say their name or someone says their name to you and you are instantly flooded with memories of seeing them in concert or their favorite songs that touch your heart or the interaction you had with them once at an airport where they showed a deep connection or kindness to you or somebody else, all of that energy is the Shem. All of those vibrations that are awakened in you, everything about the essence of that person and your experience with them that makes them different from every other person you've ever encountered, that's the Shem. That's the energetic essence. That's the vibrance, the vitality, the uniqueness of your life experience with them. And in the ancient Aramaic, the word prayer meant to set a trap for God. That's one of the valid definitions for the word prayer, is to set a trap for God. Well, what do you mean trap God? And I think about, you know, this cage that I'm going to put bait in, and the door's open and the animal's going to come in and go to the bait, and then the door's going to slam and I've got the animal in there. That doesn't make any sense. What do you mean, set a trap for God? Well, the understanding from the ancient Aramaic was that the word God was not about a person. It's a word referencing something that goes beyond words and beyond physical experience. It's energy, it's intelligence, it's vibration, it's essence. And so the idea is, how do I get myself aligned, like an antenna might be aligned, receptive, like a radio might receive the signal? How do I align myself? How do I create an open space in myself? How do I get attuned to the energy of this higher intelligence, integrated essence? And words escape me. But how do I do that? How do I get to the place where I can receive the insight, the intuition, the higher vibrations of life, the vitality, the essence, the joy? The answer from Yeshua was, move yourself into the same energy of alignment that I'm moving myself into. Think of everything you've heard me talk about as a finger pointing toward an experience. Move yourself into that space of openness and receptivity. Put the conscious logical mind aside. Put all of the labels aside and move into the Shem, the resonant energetic vibration, the experience of the song of life. Move into that. And that's how you pray. That's how you get access to more of what life has to offer you. That's how you become the conduit for the creative energy to express in this moment through you. So there is that experience of meditation or openness or allowance or aligning myself with the essence of what I felt when I was with somebody that I felt was really vibrating at a higher level. And then there are the specific tools that Michael and Jeannie offer on this website, whyagain.org, that help me remove the stuck points, the blockages, the traumatic energies, the negative beliefs about myself that are lodged in me. And in combination, these two things, opening myself to my true nature and allowing that true nature to express through me, recognizing, as I like to close out these shows, we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love. So aligning my awareness to that, bringing my conscious awareness into alignment with that, and then being willing to acknowledge when something less than that comes up. And it will. I have decades of living life and having hopes and fears and frustrations. And when they get resonated, being willing to step into the use of a tool to see clearly the false nature of everything that is not like that resonance of the creative energy that some would call love, some would call light, some would call life, some would call spirit, some would call the great comforter. The name is irrelevant. The experience is what we're going for. And anything that you find that helps you slow down, open your awareness to your true nature, and help you actively remove anything that's less than that from your conscious logical mind or your physical body's energy system, etc., is something we would want to support you in using. Anything that helps you step into this two-prong approach of opening yourself to the experience of creation expressing through you in this moment and actively acknowledging and working to remove or see to the root of any negative emotion, any negative belief, any negative thought about yourself or someone else. Because as we understand in this work, the negative is false. The labeling, the judging takes me out of allowance, surrender, and acceptance. And those are the keys to the kingdom as outlined in the Way of Mastery. The other thing is, one of the other words that was being talked about in Dale Allen Hoffman and Oliver's talk this week was the kingdom of heaven. And the kingdom of heaven is not a place. The kingdom of heaven is this openness, is this Shem, is this vibrational quality, is creation singing its song. It's us being aware of that, the way we would be maybe a baby letting a lullaby wash over it, just attuning to all that is in the moment. The essence of the great teachings are that the kingdom of heaven is in, as, and through you in this moment. It is the energy space within which you are living, moving, and having your existence, your being. It is not a foreign destination. It is not a location in space and time. It is the vibratory essence or Shem or experience of your life as it's expressing in the context of the greater creation. And it's awareness of that that brings us this experience that we think we're looking for. There is no creating of heaven. There is no getting to heaven. There is only recognizing that you're part of it, that it's here in, as, and through you in this moment, that your being, your awareness is in the place, in the moment where it can become aware of that if you align to it, if you attune to it. So that's my offering for the first half of our Mind Shifters Radio today. We have about 28 minutes left for comments, questions, answers, testimonials, soliloquies. My call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What, if anything, that I was just talking about piques your curiosity or raises a question? Pray in my Shem. Pray in my name. Align yourself to the energy of creation by aligning yourself with the essence of energy that you have felt from me as you've experienced me. That would be what Yeshua would have been saying to his students, his friends, his disciples. Not recite my name and say everything's going to be better because I say Yeshua's name, but actively move to be aligned with the energy that you experience when you are in my presence. So, how does that strike you? What does that bring up as comments or questions? How can we turn the next 25 minutes into something that would be useful to you, to be of service to you? That's our intention for being here, and that gets a lot easier when somebody raises a hand or shoots me a text or an email. You can shoot me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And let me know how we can be of service in this next 25 minutes. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. Or just hang out where you're hanging out. The other work I've been doing, reading I've been doing, is with Richard. Is that Richard Moss's two books? And they are talking about this very same thing. They're talking about learning Inside Out Healing by Richard Moss and the Mandala of Being, Discovering the Power of Awareness. They're essentially two books about learning to become more aware. Oddly enough, this means thinking less. Oddly enough, this means pouring more of my mind energy into the part of my mind that can step back and watch me without thinking about it. That part of my mind that can be in questioning and observation, which doesn't take any knowledge. It doesn't take knowledge of my multiplication tables or the periodic chart or my history as a person. This ability to be aware, this ability that each of us can develop and strengthen, to put part of our mind energy into stepping back and watching our thought process, watching the flow of emotions, seeing how they are resonated or triggered by the perception that we create and the outside events that happen around us. That part of my mind that can step back and be the observer is a part of my mind that most of us were never introduced to, and those few of us who have been introduced to it, we often don't practice it, and we don't strengthen it. We get so caught up in the daily living and the what we used to call the rat race and the relationships and the drama and trauma. I had somebody in my office yesterday talking about the he's got an upcoming family gathering, and he's dreading it because he's got sisters and brothers and a mother and a father, and there's backstabbing and gossip, and there's, you know, the everybody knows how everybody else should be living their life, and the question is, what should he do about that? Well, if he gets into a big pattern of thought that has him judging them as being bad or wrong for doing gossip, then he's basically doing the same thing they're doing. He's stepping back and judging someone else. And, of course, he's doing another thing that is very popular these days for people to talk about, especially since the law of attraction came out. He's focusing a lot of his energy on things he doesn't want. I don't want to go in there and have this person tell me about that person, and I don't want to sit there and let this person rail at me about how I wasn't there for the last party, and I don't want, and he just went through this list of things he doesn't want to do. So in my work with him yesterday, I took a breath or two, and I asked him to start focusing on what he does want. And it stopped him in his tracks, because he's been in this family for 30-some years, and he's so conditioned to the drama, the trauma, the backbiting, the gossip, the slander, et cetera, that's all he knows is to say, I don't like that, I don't want that. But when I asked him, what is it that you want to focus on that you do want to create when these people come in from out of town, and if you go to this, you know, this other family member's house for this visit, what do you want to have happen? And it was a real shock to his system, and we had to slow it down and start talking. He said, I don't know. I said, well, how about this? How about you would like to talk to them about how you're doing at work and how it is for you to raise two sons and how it is for you to interact with your best friends when you go fishing, or, you know, what your favorite recreational activities are. And you'd like to question them about how are they handling life as a parent and what do they like to do in their spare time and how is their job going and how is their health. And if you get through those and those conversations, those topics of conversations don't flow and spark other good, productive exchange of information and intimate connection with people, then you put it out there and you have some conversations about it. And then when they want to switch back to their gossip or talking about other people that aren't there, you excuse yourself and say, okay, I gotta go. And this was such a novel idea that he sat there and his mouth hung open. Now, many people need some help giving themselves permission to actually leave. Any interaction, a family gathering, a conversation, when it turns into a direction that they find unacceptable or harsh or abusive or counterproductive. So that's another thing we have to work on. But it was quite the shock, ended up with some chuckles of laughter, for this person in his 30s to absolutely have it sink in that, oh my God, that's right, I could leave. I don't have to stay and subject myself to interactions that I find insulting, unproductive, abusive, trauma and drama generating. I have the capacity to choose what I do with my time and my focus of my energy. And in this work, I strongly encourage people to get introduced to and then exercise their awareness of these two factors. Number one, you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. This is just part of life as an aware human being. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And number two, it is the choice of focus of your awareness in each new present moment that actually creates your experience of life in that moment. Now, Guy Finley is a wordsmith, and Guy Finley, you know, has a much shorter way to say this. He says, as goes my attention, so comes my experience. And the only part that's missing there is that I get to choose where my attention goes. And wherever I put my attention is part of how I'm creating my experience of life. And as Michael Rice would point out, this is a spiritual faculty that unless I exercise it, unless I become aware of it and practice it, it is not very strong in me. And or I won't have much access to it. But spiritual faculty of will, I choose the focus of my conscious awareness in each moment. And if I'm focusing on something that's leaving me feeling angry, sad, scared, hurt, frustrated, guilt, shame, resentment, bitterness, etc., any of the negative emotions, if I like that experience, I can get more of it by just continuing to do what I'm doing. If I don't like it, I can shift the focus of my awareness. I can step back into the observer mode. I can tap into the awareness that my true nature is this energy of creation expressing in form in the moment. And I can pick up a tool, which involves, oddly enough, very little use of my conscious logical mind. It does not take any of the figuring it out aspect of my mind. It takes stepping through a process of questioning and observation and allowing the truth of the moment to act on me. And if I'm willing to do that, my life will probably start getting better in ways I could never have imagined. So by extension, we're suggesting that you might get the same kind of results if you chose to do those two things. Exercise your ability to shift the focus of your conscious awareness. There's one of those words that they were going through in the Aramaic teachings, and the word is repent. And it's fascinating when you study this and these linguists and these spiritual teachers, and they say, you know what? That word that has come down to us through the English word repent, which has to do with apologize and make amends for and undergo some punishment or do some prayer or, you know, do some good deed to compensate for something you did wrong because you're a sinner. The word repent from the ancient Aramaic had more of the meaning of turn 180 degrees. Turn around, partially but completely. And one of the teachers I was listening to talk about this, back and forth between Dale and Oliver, talked about how it's a 180-degree turn of my focus of attention. We talk about this a lot in this work. My culture teaches me that when I have a negative emotion, that's supposed to wake me up and let me know that someone or something outside of me is in error. Someone or something outside of me needs to change in order for me to feel better. Something's wrong out there in the world with this person, with what they said or did, with what they didn't do that they should have. So my focus when I have a negative emotion from my cultural training and conditioning is outside of me. And the word repent was meant to turn the focus back into me, to quit focusing on the speck in my brother's eye when there's a log in mine, to quit focusing on what someone or something outside of me did or didn't do and blaming that for my upset. Instead, turn the focus completely into me, to my energy field, to my mental emotional processing, to my choice of the focus of my conscious awareness in this moment, because that's the source of my negative emotion. And once I repent, once I turn inward, now I'm actually looking at the dynamics that are giving rise to the tension, the fear, the anger, whatever the negative emotion is, and now I can choose again. Now I can choose differently. Now I can ask, how am I creating this emotion? Or I can ask, what am I making this situation mean? And then because of that interpretation, how am I generating this emotion? So the word repent has nothing to do with acknowledging that you're a sinner and that you've done wrong and you have to make amends for it. The word repent from the ancient Aramaic meant quit focusing on the outside, turn your attention back into yourself, understand that you are creating your experience of life in each new present moment by how you're choosing to focus your conscious awareness. And when you're willing to step into that, when you're willing to start exercising, practicing, strengthening your ability to choose the focus of your conscious awareness, you strengthen that spiritual faculty of will, your life will change. And you will have more of a sense of agency and control over that change. So, repent as a word meaning to turn the focus from the outside 180 degrees back onto myself and explore, question, examine, be open to seeing how I am creating the very upset that my conscious logical mind tells me it doesn't want, and my conscious logical mind has been trained or conditioned to blame on others. So, we have about 10 minutes left. We've got plenty of time for a comment or a question or a redirect or a suggestion for a different direction for our next 10 minutes. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. And I'll announce you by your area code. What's on your mind? What have we sparked with our conversation so far? Area code 910, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hey, Dr. Tim, it's Jill from Wilmington.
Well, hello, Jill from Wilmington. How the heck are you?
I am distressed. I think you just opened up a can of worms for me, and of course it's 10 minutes till the end of the call, but I'm going to jump in anyway. So everything that you've been talking about has really been resonating with me, but I wanted to say, and I'll just tell myself a little bit, that I think I've been way out in the weeds. I feel like I have been as far away from Yeshua's Shem as I could possibly be. And, you know, you're talking about choosing your conscious awareness, and I'm noticing how much I have been driven by unconscious awareness. And there's a whole bunch of situations that I can talk about, but I think one is just with my partner, my relationship, that just recently blew up, and I've sort of on one level been considering how am I contributing to this situation, how can I see it differently, and using the tools. But I think there's been a lot more happening on a different level I don't even know what else to say about it. I'm not, you know, I'm not very good at working things out verbally. I'm an introvert, so I don't typically talk my way through things, but I do find myself in this feeling of distress. Like, what, how did I get to a place where I interpreted a lot of his actions and behaviors as total indifference, like not even caring? And what's the tape that's playing in my head? I mean, I have an idea of what it is.
What's your idea?
But how did that, my idea is that I somewhere believe I'm not lovable.
Oh, that's good. Hear the energy in your voice right there. Breathe.
Yeah.
So when you hold a belief like that, every time it gets resonated, I'm going to choose the words from Diedrich Wolzak's work. Every time I hold a belief like that and it gets resonated, the belief chooses my emotion. They're connected energetically, you know, resonance, vibration. Michael Rice talks on that stuff. So they're connected in my energy field, in my mind. And every time one of those beliefs gets resonated, it chooses my emotion. And then when that strong negative emotion gets activated in my system, it actually distorts my perception. So this is, you know, the Occam's razor, the simplest explanation is, you know, the most useful. If it explains, stick with the simple one. So here's a simple one. You're in an intimate relationship. I don't know how you did it, but you found somebody who thinks you're attractive and creative and sexy and smart and worth being with. Guess what's going to happen when that happens? You're going to have everything that's unlike that in your energy system, every negative belief about how you don't deserve to be paid attention to or that you're not lovable, or every one of those that's in you still is going to get resonated. And so the core of your work must be to understand that you cannot get, you know, I found myself in working with people in the past, I don't know, 6-8 months, talking to them about how I just get this image. They'd be sitting in the room with me, and I get this image of they're sitting on the couch, and I get this image of a mine shaft that drops down like 30 stories into the underground and into this vault that's like, you know, 13 feet thick steel-reinforced concrete. And in that vault is their wounded child. So they're sitting up here at you know, ground level with me, sitting on the couch talking, and I'm telling them how beautiful they are and how smart and how intelligent and how competent and how funny and how all these good things, and I've got all the evidence from their life and my interactions with them, and that's wonderful stuff. They feel great when they're with me, right? But none of that gets to the wounded part of them 30 feet down in the mine shaft in the vault. They're the only one that has access. It's only their inner thoughts and beliefs that access their wounded younger parts. So they have to actively take these tools and apply them to the energetic, wounded, emotionally false belief-laden younger parts of themselves. So this may not be any more complicated than recognizing somewhere along the line, probably in the first 7 to 8 years of life when Jill was growing up, Jill downloaded some beliefs that she's not very lovable or very worthwhile. And those beliefs are very deeply held and they're energetically tied to emotions of sadness and fear and anger. And anytime those beliefs get activated, they turn on or they vibrate and resonate those emotions. You don't get to choose your emotions once those negative beliefs get activated. I'm taking that directly from the Diedrich Wolzak way of talking about it. And so your job, your task then, is to go get in touch with that younger part of yourself and question, work with, allow what beliefs got downloaded in those earlier times, and how can I see them as false now when I have my adult self up here at ground level sharing life experience with that younger version of self, in this little analogy or picture I'm painting, the 30 stories down in the vault. And once I see, oh, yeah, this happened when I was this age, and this is part of that dynamic, and when I talk about it, you know, my voice breaks and I have the lump in my throat, I want to go visualize working with that younger part of myself, or I want to go do some worksheets as though I was that 8-year-old who was completely rejected by mother or father or whoever, and I want to make a change in the belief. And it may be that simple. But we know without any question that when I have a negative emotion active in my system or a negative thought activated about myself or somebody else, it distorts my perception. So you were asking, how could you have interpreted these things to mean that you're intimate partner doesn't care about you? That's how, right? Because when those energies, those emotions get activated, they quite literally distort or help create my perception.
Yeah, that explains it. Yeah. Yeah, my perception and my reality has been completely distorted, and I didn't even know it. That's how much I believed it. I couldn't see any way to see it differently. And yeah. Well, it's a good opportunity, as always. It helps me understand too. I mean, so many, like I said, there's so many situations in my life right now that are making me feel, bringing up that same sense of just lost or confused, even at the strong emotions or just strong emotions in general. So it's a very mixed up place to be, but yeah, it makes sense that, you know, the vault going way down deep in there.
Well,
and it's very well protected too. I'm invested in all my stories.
Yeah,
so
yeah, but it's only protected though because I believe what my 5-year-old or 8-year-old self was fearful of is still fearful to me as the adult.
Yeah.
That's the only reason it's well protected.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense.
And so the idea is it's a very simple process. It's not easy, but it's simple of just, Michael Rice would say, do all of the above, right? And I remember several times, probably three or four times in my life, I've agreed to that groups of people were saying, hey, let's do 5 worksheets a day for 40 days and see how our life transforms. So, you know, it's really hard to come up with a worksheet to do when you're as near perfect as the great and powerful Dr. Hayes. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. But when you have, but you know you've got some core issues, like I tend to think I'm not lovable, or I tend to think my only value comes from what I can do for others or whatever. If I know I've got those core issues and I'm going to do 5 worksheets a day, all I have to do is make sure I do 1 or 2 every day on that core issue. And progress will happen. Right? Just stick with the basics. You know you've got some of these deeply held beliefs that you're not lovable. And they are just beliefs. They're just false patterns that have been well practiced over the years. So they're open to change if you apply the tools. And once you do that, you remove enough of that negativity, your perception will clarify. And you'll quit creating these false perceptions that your partner doesn't care about you or want to be associated with you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I know it's 1 o'clock, but I have one quick question. So right now I'm pretty stable emotionally, right? Like that upset has faded, and I just wonder, in this state, does that still hold true? I can't always top that emotion. There's something about saying it. Maybe it's saying it to you, or it could be to saying it to anyone, but actually, here it comes, the emotion again. When I'm by myself and doing a worksheet, it doesn't always come. And so is it still doing something, even if I'm insulated from that feeling, if that makes any sense?
Can I slide a thought in here, Tim?
Yeah.
My offering would be that when you're doing it on your own, you're counting on your own vitality. When you're doing it with Tim, you're touching the hem of his garment and being vitalized. And there it pops.
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing like a little
yours
help from
too.
Our friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's the whole idea of holding the space for each other. You know, you remember in that situation where that woman who has this 12-year issue of blood knows she just needs to touch the hem of his garment. And it doesn't mean a piece of cloth. It means stepping into the vitality, the space he holds. And she's vitalized, and then he reminds her that it's her. You know, not everybody in the audience healed. It was her work, her willingness, the work she was doing. And, you know, there's nothing like a little support from our friends. Thank you, Dr. Tim, for being the space.
Dr. Tim. Thanks, Dr. Rice. That's true. I think, I probably felt that second wave of emotion probably right when you came on the call. So thanks for letting me touch your garment.
Breathe and we breathe with you.
I'm thinking maybe Dr. Tim had dropped off because his numbers disappeared. So he usually goes back. And... Oh, okay. Awesome.
I have an appointment I have to run to, but that person's a few minutes late. So I was just going to say that this question that you asked, Jill, comes up quite a bit in our groups too, because people will say, you know what, when I do these worksheets on my own, I don't get anywhere near as much benefit as if I do them in the group. And so, one of the things, you know, that happens is what Michael Rice is talking about here is the idea of the shared energy and the amplification. And the other thing is the concept of willingness. And one of the things that's going to diminish my willingness is my fear. So you were talking about, you know, this thing is very well defended or guarded, and it's only because I have these fears. So you can start working on your willingness by reminding yourself that every fear you hold about these mental emotional issues is false. And with practice, you know, get that willingness, your faculty of will to pull the worksheets out and do them anyway. And eventually that willingness gets demonstrated to that fearful part of your mind. Because you're not just talking about doing worksheets, you're actually doing the worksheets. And the action speaks louder than the word, and you start to demonstrate to that fearful part of your mind that you truly believe it's okay for you to see what you've been walling off from yourself, hiding from yourself in that vault 30 stories down.
And there's a worksheet for strengthening will. You know, jump on the website, the Mind Goal Management Sheet, the workshop, Getting the Stress You Need, explains that, and that starts to strengthen that faculty of will.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, you might remember the first in Y workshop you were at, and I think I probably talked about the whole idea of factors. You know, nobody knows what the factor is that's going to move you that half of 1% in vitality that allows all hell to break loose and be a blessing. And, you know, there's so many things, and that's why we all, why, you know, the standard answer so often is all of the above. Because that one mm-hmm. little thing that seems like, well, that's nothing, but that might be enough to raise your vitality, that half a point to take you into where you can open and process whatever that is. So that's why there's such a wide variety of tools. To and each one is another factor, another little niche that, oh, I get 0.2% vitality by doing this. I get 0.5% vitality by doing this. Oh, here's a 4-point bump. Boom, everything breathes, moves. I open my breath and rock through it. And community is such an important key.
It is. I so many thoughts right now, but one is, you know, I picked up the phone and I hit the button, even though I didn't know what I was going to say or what would come out of my mouth, because it's an action. There's something magical that happens whenever I do that, and I don't even know what it is, and I don't have to, but I wanted the magic of it, which overcame my worry about sounding foolish or confused or whatever. And also, this conversation is so reassuring because it is overwhelming and it is fearful. There is a fear there. And that overwhelm shuts me down. That's the response to, you know, what I, in my mind, think is a big deal and feels traumatic, maybe even. So then I just go into this collapse mode of like, I can't do it. And, you know, talking about this, and I like what Dr. Tim said, it's simple. It's not easy, but it is a simple process. That's so reassuring, like, oh, I can do this.
Yeah, and this is a safe space to be confused or feel foolish. Safe enough
yeah.
to let that come up and clarity come sure. and move through it, you know. It's like, oh, cool, here we are, being human or non-human and reaching for our humanness.
Mm-hmm. True. If I'm going to be confused, this is a good place to do it.
For sure. Well, we haven't played team tag in a while, Dr. Tim. It feels good.
Yeah. I feel privileged and honored that you're all on the call. Like, this is great. It's like a little reunion.
Yay for reunions. What are the other thoughts for you, young lady, or Dr. Tim?
Well, for me, I was just noticing a couple things. One, I feel much lighter. I felt, I don't know, despairing when I called. And I now my tears are just sort of relief. So that's one nice thing to report. And the other is I feel a lot of energy kind of buzzing through me, which is also interesting. And I kind of feel like I want to use that in some way to, you know, maybe just recognizing it and understanding, like, you know, this is an up level, and maybe using that to do a few worksheets now. So I've got some worksheets I can do.
Yay. One other small piece there, if you go back and you listen, one of the things that you languished was how when blah, blah, blah happens, it shuts me down. Mm-hmm. And if you remember our definition of denial, it's when I think or speak as though something outside of me, it, is the cause of what I'm doing inside, then that's another part of my mind that I have to dissociate from in order to, you know, believe what I believe. And when I can shift into more of a responsibility communication mode, oh, I realize when this thing happens, I shut down. Now I'm back in control of the part of me that holds that automatic decision system shut down, and then I can change it. Otherwise, it's something outside of me, and my mind has to generate perceptual constructs that will prove it's outside of me when it really isn't. So just to keep moving toward more and more responsibility language instead of that projection.
Yeah. Well, thank you for noticing that and pointing it out. I feel like that's part of the trick that I use to keep it all in that vault. You know, like, I can't deal with this. It's too big, blah, 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 all that stuff. Okay, thanks. That was
helpful. So if you're carrying it, you're big enough to handle it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be carrying it. And life just gets so much easier and so much more fun when you choose not to carry it.
Well, I like that flip. That's great. That just changed a whole lot of thoughts.
It's a good thing. How's your son doing?
He is overall good. He's working on a lot of different traumatic stuff. He just had an appointment this morning with his therapist, and this is one of my distresses, but I also think that, what I notice is when he goes through some things that reminds me of whatever, gosh, I think I'll just cry for the whole time we talk.
Go for
whatever
it.
Whatever I might
have been going
through.
You know, if you can breathe and cry, go for it. If you can only do one, I'd suggest breathing instead of crying. And I'll breathe with you. So it sounds like maybe he's opened up an old power person dynamic for you. What's going on for him?
I don't know. So he is working on some issues with, like, at nighttime, settling down to go to sleep, and when it gets real quiet, and he's anxious and avoidant of settling. And
how many years has he been circling the sun now?
He will be 12 in November. So,
wow.
11. Yeah.
Will he let you breathe him?
We do connected breathing together. Yeah.
So that might become a good nighttime ritual for him, you know, something that maybe you go in and support him with it for, you know, a time period until he starts to pick that up on his own. And if he's in anxiety, you know, whatever that anxiety is about, if he gets into the habit of just doing that, some still point breathing, then the anxiety will tend to melt off. And, you know, eventually he'll uncover what's at the root of it and change it. And that'll be the end of his anxiety.
Yeah, well, I think that's, I like that, and I think, well, let me tell you the rest of it, and then you tell me who actually needs the breathing.
All of the above.
I suspect.
Including us.
Me. So, two things. First is, not necessarily in order, but when I was about his age and younger, sixth grade, and younger than that, I also had great difficulty at night settling and dealing mm-hmm. with the quiet in the house, settling down. Right. And obviously, it was painful. So here he is at sixth grade, and the thing that changed it for me, it didn't cure it, but it was a temporary fix as I went on a trip with my sixth grade class. And I remember my mom talked to the teacher about the fact that I had trouble sleeping. I was really worried about it. But I slept fine. I went away from home and I slept fine. And it was such a relief. And I thought I was cured until it came back in later years. But so here he is at sixth grade during this time when I had like the first, you know, whatever you want to call it. But the other factor is that after he was born, I know I've talked about this before, his dad passed away. His dad died while he was sleeping. I woke up and found that he had passed. And for many months after that, I could not turn off lights. I didn't want to be alone. I did not like quiet, especially at night. And I had this newborn baby who soaked in all of that. So there was a lot at work.
That's a lot to deal with.
And so my son at night, he has lots of night lights. He has these kind of calming stories that he plays because he doesn't like being in the dark. He doesn't like the quiet. It's almost exactly of how I felt for 6 months to a year after his dad died.
Right.
I just panicking all the time, especially when it would get quiet and dark. So
looking
I recognize
inside,
that this is a really great
is...
healing opportunity. Say that. Say that again.
Powerful. And very likely from what you're saying, he being a newborn, that going on in you energetically would naturally resonate the same in him.
Absolutely.
And so the visual I hold is seeing you both breathing together and perhaps, you know, getting into that as a routine in the evening and then getting to the point perhaps where you can, while breathing him in the evening, you can share with him that time in your life and what happened. And let him know that that's just an energetic pattern that he's taken on and that you had at that age. And so, you know, who knows how many generations it's been going on. And it's time for us to let it go. And that being alone with our thoughts, being alone in the dark is safe and it's healing and a wonderful place to be. And as you give him a space to process out whatever those thought patterns, energetic patterns were, which are probably totally unconscious for him, and acknowledge the safety of him being inside his own mind with his own thoughts and dealing with what's there, and then he's always got you as support for dealing with it. And of course, what you're teaching him is going to be what you need to learn. And as you really listen energetically and auditorily to him and share comes up, then you'll get to learn it. And it'll shift and change for both of you.
I've been a little concerned that I'm not able to support him because it definitely, you know, when he struggles, it resonates all sorts of things for me, and I don't feel capable, don't feel supportive because I'm in a state. But it is, I guess, yeah, healing together, right? I don't have to be healed and whole. I can be in the wound too.
Exactly. And all you have to do is have the tools and the willingness to use them. Having the tools and the willingness to use them doesn't mean you're finished the work yet. And being the support space for him, you're perfectly suited. Being his mom. Mm-hmm. You know, at 12, it might be a good time to step into and take him through an organized study plan for acquiring these tools. And, you know, where you both set up a structure where you spend time working with the tools on a regular basis and have a structured study that goes with it. And what I'm thinking at this point, you know, we've got a new product out there that's got 90 hours of video on the topic of codependence to interdependence and communication, recover healing through relationships, mind shifters, still point breathing, codependence, why is this happening to me again, the forgiveness process. And it's a self-study video program, and it might be something to take him through as his mom, and, you know, one night a week, two nights a week, or Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon, make it a thing that you do together with him to enhance his ability to heal his life as you enhance your ability to heal your life. And you can set up your own, you know, time frame. And so that might be a thing to look at doing with him. You know, he's been on the edge of the tools for a long time, and now a systematic, organized stepping into them, it might be time for him to have that. And wow, at 12, what a foundation to give him for the future. And
yeah.
You know, I don't know what his educational process is, but it might even be something that the school or a college even, you know, at his age, at 12, be something that he might even be able to, as you do that with him, get credit for. Setting up a study program and get credit for it as well. You know, some advanced college credit at 12. There are lots of kids doing that sort of thing. And it's,
well,
you know,
he would like that. He wants to be grown, so that would probably appeal greatly.
Well, you know, what was the university you went to, Jeannie?
Ashford. I went to
Ashford University. Has Why Is This Happening to Me Again 101 in their catalog. They have Healing Through Relationships in their catalog. They have Codependence to Independence in their catalog. They have Communication. Did you hear what I think I said? They have Mind Shifters and Soul Point Breathing all in their catalog for college credits.
Huh.
So, and what a study, what a foundation to give him at 12 and have him just naturally grow, you know, moving into and through puberty, growing into that level of knowledge and awareness. Just,
yeah, it would be a tremendous gift, no doubt about it. And yeah, he has been on the periphery. I mean, he's been watching me do this for a while. And so, yeah, I'll
you might
talk
drop
to him
Jeannie
about it and see if he's into it.
Yeah. Yeah, you might drop training notes. She's got, you know, she wrote all of the courses up, full description, and their official courses in their catalog when she went to school. And actually, because she had done that, she was able to move, like, through, I don't even remember exactly, a full year, if I remember correctly, Jeannie, or something that her college. Yeah, half a year of her college work for getting her BA. She
nice,
you know,
Jeannie.
Just stepped through by having done that work and turned it in. So I'm sure she'd be happy to share that writing with you, and maybe Ashford would be the school for him to do it. I don't know.
Cool. That's awesome.
That sounded like a relief breath.
I was just going to say, wow, I did not know all this was going to come out. it's been on my mind for a while. I'm aware of it's a lot of generational patterns going on here. That sleeping thing is one, and the passing of a father is one. My father's father died when my dad was 12. And here is Russell with a father who passed, and now he's turning 12. And my mother's mom, no, my grandmother's, on my mom's side, her mother died when she was, I think, 14. So there's some generational things happening here, and it seems like it's all the perfect storm right now.
What a perfect way to introduce him to adulthood and taking responsibility and doing his work and being a good ancestor. You know, one of my favorite quotes from, what's his name?
Jonas Salk.
Salk. Yeah, Salk, who invented the Salk vaccine. He says the most important thing is to be a good ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring him up into manhood as a conscious, good ancestor doing ancestral work. You know, the Native Americans have a phrase, it's Metaquiasin, which, you know, they had the awareness that when they did healing work, it was for all of their relations. And so that was their mantra going into a sweat lodge or what have you, was Metaquiasin, which was, you know, it's like, I'm offering this energetic work that I'm about to do up for the healing of all my relations, past, present, and future.
Mm-hmm.
So what a gift to give a young man at 12.
Well, this is cool. I'm thinking about too, another thing that's just really, that has been just started bugging me just today is school stuff. And you said taking responsibility. And I think that, that's what we're talking about, too, is learning that 180-degree turn towards looking at myself or teaching him how to do that versus the exterior focus. I think that's
exactly
probably the lesson here. I mean, isn't it the ultimate lesson? But hopefully he can have less to unlearn at 12
well, the sooner
versus
he
me
starts
at my age. Yeah.
You know, he's still at the place, it's about the age of 13, where, you know, if you look at down through all of the historical societies, about the age of 13, there was this ritual of passing from childhood into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the regulatory speech system solidifies and becomes relatively unavailable for change. So to catch him before he reaches that level, his whole speech system, his reality generation system is amenable still to shifting and changing without the crunching, you know, kind of bone crushing work that a lot of people have to go through in adulthood, as you're noticing, that you can give him that, well, his his internal mechanism is still malleable, and part of the intensive is the personal code evaluation. So you get to look at exactly where the weaknesses are, and okay, so here are the assignments to deal with the weaknesses of your particular mind. And with you, if you did it at the same time as he's doing it, being able to bounce back and forth, and, you know, he'll get a good laugh at getting able to see your foibles as you go through and look at, you know, the assignments you have and you with him. And it just, you know, I can see it opening a space that would be very powerful for a single mom with her son at the age of 12.
I agree.
Cool.
Definitely agree.
Well, maybe drop Jeannie an email about the descriptions, and she can forward those specific ones to you. And
yeah,
you know, we just recently, it's just a few months ago that we completed this package. It's actually made up of two full online intensive. One was a 14-week and one was a 16-week. And so we've got one more hour, kind of a bonus hour to do, because we want to round it out to a 90-hour package. Right now there's 89 hours of video from those two intensives, and so it covers all of the instruction, all of the questions and answers, all of the process work that many brilliant people did. He'll get to watch people doing just monumental pieces of work. And so it's a powerful process to go through.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for all the work that you've done to make these tools accessible to all of us. And definitely, they have changed my life. I keep coming back, so something's working. I'm still here, I should say. It's not that I keep coming back. I'm still here.
Well, you know, and that's why we're doing it, to create a space and of safety and support, and with a knowledge base that is available. You know, ultimately what we're looking to do is to make it available globally, because, you know, in the last analysis, I don't know if you remember the page in the front of my book where I talk about life with tools and life without tools, but the bottom line conclusion of that page is life without tools is hell. And most people are living in hell. And, of course, being in denial, living in hell, they find somebody to blame. Oh, God, God did this hell. It's all God's fault. And, you know, so to shift out of that blame game and into responsibility. And, you know, the fact is most family systems coming up in this culture, and in particular in this country at this point, you know, a lot of people living in hell. And not from any, you know, volition of their own. It's just been the thrust of the generations, the anger, the rage, the fear, the loss, the pain, the trauma, and no tools to deal with it. And so we've got a full range of tools, and our objective is to deliver them.
Yep. Well, I am grateful.
Well, we're grateful to be able to share them with you, and thank you for saying thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, any other thoughts for you today, young lady?
I think I am good for now, but I do thank you so much for always being there and being a support. And I have definitely, I feel an energy shift now from today, and so that is that's a big deal. And I'll keep it going.
Well, I hear, you know, and feel the energy of, there was a wall there, and it feels to me like you just sort of shattered the wall and, you know, on to the next level.
Yeah. Well, I can hear it in my voice. The tone of my voice is very different. And it even is, I can feel it vibrating down deeper into my chest than it could penetrate before. So, yes, I think that's accurate that I'm glad I smashed the wall. I would have said maybe I cracked it, but you said smashed, so I'm going to go with smash.
Go for it. Well, you know, you go back to Yeshua, or you go back to the ancient scriptures, and they talk about the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. And, you know, the religionists, the churchianity crowd has convinced us that means there was a purple curtain in the church to tore into. The veil of the temple is this barrier, this veil between the subconscious and the unconscious. And every person, sooner or later, if they're going to heal, has to open it. The sooner one starts in the process, the easier and the faster it's going to move. So that's what it's all about.
Yep.
All right, young
lady,
we appreciate you. Okay. Delight to chat.
I appreciate you.
Blessings.
Okay.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right.
Well,
well,
that
Ms. Jeannie.
Awesome way to open the second hour.
Yeah. Hey, that was, it was fun to kick the football back and forth with Dr. Tim. We haven't done that since he stepped up and started to his own show. So that was cool.
Yeah. So there are no other hands up, so maybe just go to the reading. We've got 23 minutes. Maybe somebody will have a question afterwards.
Yeah, well, I've got the book right here, open to page 108. So we're stepping into the ongoing reading of a couple of chapters in each show, and we're now on the chapter, The Body Has a Mind of Its Own. And we've been talking with the character Richard about his getting lost in the insanity of his culture and of his family system and waking up from that. And he's just, we've just been looking at why people drug themselves, the file folder effect, how when one file fires in the mind, every other file tied to that folder also moves. And this is what creates the underlying dynamics of feeling and emotion that and sensation in the body that oftentimes lead people to, in the last line when we finished in the last show we were reading was, is it any wonder people turn to drugs and alcohol to cope? And actually, to make sense of what Richard's about to say, the previous paragraph probably fits. So I'm going to repeat that. So we're talking about how there's a message that's given to people in our culture. Sex is dirty. Save it for the one you love. And then tying that together with the file folder effect and looking at all the different ways that the insanity in our culture around sexuality is resonated through the file folder effect. And I had just offered to Richard, you know, think of being in the city where one's senses are bombarded by movies, television, masses of people, magazines, newspapers, billboards, advertising stores, on taxi cabs and buses. These media continuously impale each spouse's mind in a marriage with both subliminal and overt messages of fear, guilt, sex, violence, hatred, drug and alcohol use, and abuse. If their minds contain highly charged emotional realities connected to any of these issues, and they're continuously being resonated into activity, how sane can anyone possibly be? Is it any wonder people turn to drugs and alcohol? And Richard says, this is so overwhelming, Michael. You're describing my life and the life of almost everyone I know. I'm feeling like this is so big that we could never change it, Richard said emphatically. Well, that sounds like the world's brainwashing, Richard, is my offering to him, which says, you're powerless over what's happening. You're only one person. Why don't you just give up and go along with the program? Then I asked Richard the question, or put up the invitation, I invite you to consider that the only part you need to do, Richard, is your own. You have as much power as any human being who has ever lived. Of course, as we were just saying, life without tools is hell. If people don't have the tools, there's no way out of it. So I offered him that you are capable of breaking through and making changes both within and without. The first step in convincing people change is impossible is to persuade them that pain is normal. And it is not. Due to the file folder effect, pain is accepted in a mind. It can be hooked up to any reality in that mind through the use of words and images. And any image that pain hooks into, it distorts. So the minute that pain hooks into sexuality, and of course, marriage, sex at 30, save it from the one you love. What do we have? We have these distorted perceptions of ourselves and each other and of marriage and of family. And offer him the thought that the more powerful the medium delivering the message, the greater its potential for distorting the mind's output. Richard, just as you must look inside yourself if you want to heal, I'm suggesting we each must look at how we, as human beings, have created the insanities in our world. I know it starts to feel overwhelming as we dig into these issues, but overwhelm is just a stage in the healing process. And so, you know, any unresolved issue that anyone experiences within themselves is going to tend to be a reflection of the unresolved issues of that individual's bloodline. And each person is going to have to pass through that valley. And if one has the tools, then that march back to true human life becomes much easier. If there's some knowledge of, oh, okay, so here's where I've been, here's where I'm going, I'm not there yet, and I'm in process, it becomes a safe process to do. Whereas when one's just bonkers, oblivious, locked into rage and fear and guilt and pain and totally and completely dissociated trauma, so people don't even know where it's coming from, there is resolution. But you take a look around and you talk to your neighbors and you watch the news, you watch the media, you know, just look at what the television is presenting to you. And, you know, there's so many shows that week after week, month after month, year after year, they're just an exhibition of trauma. We have a population that has no tools that understands healing. And healing of all of these dynamics is not only possible, but inevitable. And so to recognize there are many stages in the healing process, and overwhelm is just one of them, and it's safe to face and experience the overwhelm that is unresolved within your family system and has been inherited and locked into your tissue structure. And as you do your work, you dissolve overwhelm. And then no matter what comes to you, you can't be overwhelmed because there is no longer a mind structure in you of generational overwhelm. You're freed of it. It's like, oh, here's another issue. Oh, this is a big one. This is huge. Man, this is so big. I can't even imagine it. But I'm not overwhelmed in it because I no longer hold. I've forgiven in me the reality of overwhelm. It's just another issue. Well, gee, you know, this one might take me a week, a month, might take me a year, might take me 5 years. This is a huge issue that we're looking at. Yep, okay. And I can be at peace with that, recognize, okay, you know, this one's big enough. It might take me 5 years to do. Okay, well then, I'm willing to do it. And I say that from a perspective and a voice of experience. Because I still work on issues in my life, in my physiology, that I've been working on for decades. Now, are they anything like what they were decades ago? No, thank God. But I recognize that there's still a process happening. You know, I was almost, well, they told my father at the point of my birth that if he wanted to see me alive, he was at work, and they contacted me and said, I better get to the hospital because I wasn't going to make it through the night. Next 25 years, I lived on an inhalator and pills. And, you know, we've talked a few times about the intensified work that Jeannie and I have been doing. And actually, the last 3 days, I've been opening new levels of healing. I mean, my lungs, you know, I can go back to 10, 15, 20 years ago when I'd go into one of these, you know, disease fairs where they have doctors out in the street selling diseases and under the guise of a health fair. And they check your lung capacity, and I can remember, you know, doing that and being told, "Wow, you're in pretty awesome shape. Your lungs are pretty cool." And then I'd tell them my history, and then they'd want to go back and retest because I couldn't possibly have that capacity. But I still recognize that the full healing of what almost killed me at my birth, 6 days in utero, them giving my mother Pitocin to try to kick me out of the womb, almost killed me. And just the last 3 or 4 days, I've been processing new levels of literally being able to feel as I've opened new spaces in my lungs, new awareness in my lungs, been able to feel literally when I'm breathing out the toxic fumes leaving my lungs, catching in my throat. So, you know, if you want an instant fix, this isn't it. You know, you go take a drug and it'll make it feel like some sort of an instant fix because you'll be able to hide things from yourself until the next time they come up, and then, you know, they'll find another drug and they'll hide for another level. And remember that every drug you introduce to your structure, by definition, introduces diseases to your body. It may resolve a certain set of symptoms at some given moment, but every drug installs diseases in the body of the person taking the drug. That's just the fact of it. Now, you may say, well, you know, risk-to-benefit ratio. Well, I'm better off not dealing with that, even though I don't know what's coming from this. If we've got something that's truly healing, then my offering is no substance, circumstance, or activity that is actually healing is going to introduce diseases into the structure. That's just foolishness. And certainly I understand, you know, I would say to people there are cases, there are circumstances and situations where but just be aware of what you're doing and at least walk the healing path along with the treatment path until you get to the point where you don't need to utilize substances that introduce diseases into your structure, that you only use substances that strengthen, enhance, and vitalize your structure. And those things that are truly healing will never cause disease. Now, they may cause symptoms. They may vitalize, you know, as we were talking about with Jill just a little while ago. What did I mean when I said touching the hem of Tim's garment? Tim holding a space, her being vitalized by it, symptoms move. Dis-ease symptoms, but those are energetic patterns that are moving out of the structure, as you observed, rather than being instilled by the process engaged in. And so as you understand the real healing path, you'll do more and more to strengthen and vitalize, which means you'll get to look at the old symptomatic energies that need to be moved out of your structure, and you'll get to move out of them, and you'll get to put an end to them. And that's what actual healing is, and that's what we're here to support and be part of. And so, Ms. Jeannie, does that bring out any thoughts for you, sweetie?
No, yeah, I think you said it well and said it all. We have 9 minutes if somebody has a question.
So if you're out there in this lane, I can't imagine with what we've just processed and then what the instruction has been for the last half hour, I can't imagine that there's one person out there. I can't imagine there's even one of you that doesn't have at least 3 questions based on what we just said. I don't know why you don't raise your hand, haven't raised it already. I know you've got the questions. You know, maybe you think your question isn't the right one or good enough. Every question opens space for everybody. You know, there's an interesting story about Albert Einstein, and they apparently said to him, if you were given a problem to solve and you had 1 hour to do it or you would die, what would you do? He said, I'd spend 55 minutes working on understanding what question to ask, and then I'd solve the problem in 5 minutes. So I know there are questions out there. Why don't you push one and ask your question? Maybe your voice might be shaky. Maybe you're embarrassed. Maybe you don't want to tell us your name because you want to be. Oh, great. And if you want to be anonymous, you know, pick a name. Call in, tell us your Hortense, and let's answer your questions. Let's go for that hand from Jeannie.
Area code 417. I think this is Miss Judy.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Why there, young lady? How are things out there in Springfield? I heard there was quite a crunch with COVID and such. How is the city doing? I haven't looked at anything in the news recently.
Well, the only thing I know about Springfield was on the news is that it's number 3 in the nation for crime as a dangerous city to live in.
Springfield, Missouri?
Right. That's the
are
latest
you kidding?
Find. No, they started analyzing things from a different point of view. And that's what they were basing it on. Springfield's a little upset about that.
Wow. That's shocking because yeah. I've always thought Springfield is a very peaceful. I mean, whenever I've been to Springfield, I mean, it's 150,000 people. I've always seen it as just a wonderful, sweet place to be. That shocks me.
Yeah, I thought of it as a little country town. However, you know, people are moving. There's a lot of movement going on right now with people with different cultures, backgrounds, and problems. So whatever was stable even a year ago compared to today may be totally different. So things are changing around that much.
I know that down around Theodosia, there's been a great influx of people from the West, especially in California and Oregon and that sort of thing, moving into that area, looking for that smaller town impact. But, wow. Well, we'll
they're
hold
moving
the space.
In. So, yeah, they're moving in really fast, and especially yep. from California.
Yes, yeah, that's
well,
what I've understood.
I had a couple of questions. One was for Jeannie. I wanted to ask it like three shows ago, but
okay.
things were escalating with other questions and everything, and I just kept putting it off. And that's about the hormones.
Yes.
Okay. So they put me on the combination hormone several years ago. Well, I got off of it. and they had me on progesterone. I didn't realize then, because I was feeling okay, you know, when I got off of it, I was doing the live food and everything and trying to balance my own system out.
Right.
And I did good for a while. However, all this other stuff started happening, like my hair getting dry and my skin getting dry. And
a lot of that's got to do with the hormones.
Yeah. And just recently, I've come up with my body has brought forward the lack of vitamin B in my system that it can't process it. So they're making me take they're giving me the opportunity to take shots now.
Right.
But then it escalated from there to my stomach. And then eventually it reaches my liver. You know, the things that I've been processing through, these things are coming up now. I'm at the liver. And it's what's called a hot liver.
Well,
and Michael,
you,
years Years ago, Michael told me.
Go ahead.
And then I'll be finished. Years ago, Michael told me that my body was not metabolizing the food, that I wasn't getting the nutrition. And I didn't understand exactly what that meant. So I've been praying about it and reading and watching things, you know. And then finally it dawned on me the other day through the process of this, whatever it is that I'm going through, that it's been my liver that it's causing the food to, it's like a sluggish liver, but it's a hot liver. It heats up whenever I take nutrition in. And that's why I've had to deal with the rheumatoid arthritis. So going back to the hormones, what do you
okay,
think?
Were you on the show when I was talking to Susan that I had gone, like my cholesterol was high, my sugar was high, my hormones were low. I mean, it was like all these things were out of balance. And physician, who is a naturopath, or not a naturopath, but he's more natural. He's a medical doctor, but they did blood work, and he said, if we get your hormones in balance, your metabolism will kick in, and it will take care of the cholesterol and the sugar and all of that. I mean, it was like the hormones was the baseline of everything else that was crazy right then. But you want to do the bioidentical hormones that you like rub on your skin that your body soaks in that way. Your liver doesn't have to process it the way it does if you take pills orally.
Well, that's what they gave me was the oral one. So I need the cream instead.
Right. And find a compounding pharmacy. Your doctor can look at your blood levels and he can say, okay, she needs this much, you know, estrogen, this much progesterone, this much testosterone. And then they can balance it. Every 6 months you have new blood work done and they see if you're at a level or if they need to adjust something in one direction or the other until they get it at a good balance. And I was taking all three of those as a cream until I wasn't sleeping well. And then they pulled the progesterone out of it, and I'm taking that one by mouth. And I take it at night because then it helps me sleep. But the other two hormones I'm still doing as the cream and do what's called bioidentical because that way it's not as synthetic.
Yeah. Well, definitely I haven't been sleeping. I mean, for the last, at least the last 6 months since I moved into this particular apartment.
Got to get your sleep back on track. I just took a look online, and there's a compounding pharmacy called Lawrence Drug and Compounding Pharmacy in Springfield.
I use that one.
I contact them.
Okay.
Well, I'd suggest you talk to them and ask them to guide you to a physician who will help you with your bioidenticals. They'd be the best people. You know, if you don't have somebody right now, somebody who doesn't, I mean, it's a specialty. So if you talk to them, they'll know who the best people are in town in terms of medical referral to help you to get that back in balance. And that's just going to change everything.
That's a great idea.
Cool. Well, we're down to the last minute. So, Judy, if it's appropriate and you need more information, we can continue this conversation tomorrow. And in the meantime, we appreciate you. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.